This week's show with Shayna Ben-Hayoun is made possible by the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. The EGA offers a broad range of lectures, classes, and events for needleworkers of all types and all techniques. Upcoming classes include box making, Parisian Patisserie by Sarah DeRose Hall. In the class, you'll create a beautiful embroidered box reminiscent of the boxes seen in patisseries of Paris. Registration opens October 5. Registration is now open for the Candy Cane Christmas decoration with Emma Broughton. The decoration is a 3D felt and goldwork candy cane that will make a perfect gift or tree decoration. To participate in these and many more activities, join the EGA at egausa.org as a member at large or as part of your membership in a local chapter. You'll find all the information at egausa.org. Thanks to the folks at EGA for sponsoring the show. And now on to our conversation with Shayna Ben-Hayoun. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artists. Our artist this week, second time from SBT Stitches, Shayna Ben-Hayoun. Shayna, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's been ages. 2018.
Yes.
We talked. Wow.
Yes, and life has changed a lot since then.
Yeah, you had just started designing needlepoint canvases, designing and painting then.
Yes.
And now you own a store.
Yes.
Way to sit around and kill time.
Yeah, and all the in between.
Because now you have kids. Didn't have kids then. And
yep.
Oh boy. Yep.
When we recorded the previous podcast, I was very newly pregnant with my son. I was in the first trimester, so nobody knew. And my son just turned 3 in April, so it has been a long time.
Wow. Wow. So, let's see. Well, we'll get to the store in a minute. So how do we still do the painted canvas design? Has that had to get set aside? Where are you at on that?
So when we last spoke, I was just leaving my career job. I was making needlepoint my full-time business, and I was designing canvases for what I hoped would go into needlepoint shops. And I showed at the market in 2018, and I had a decent response to my designs, but my designs were very young and modern, profanity, you know, stuff that the older generation was not used to. And I like to say that I was kind of, I mean, I don't like to say, but how I've explained it to people is that I was almost like blacklisted from a lot of shops because they didn't want to carry canvases for the younger generation. They weren't open to it. You know, the needlepoint industry as a whole moves much slower than any other industry in the world. And so I took that of not getting into the amount of shops that I wanted to. And I found that if I painted canvases of what people actually wanted, meaning, you know, if you wanted a name on a canvas or you wanted a certain saying on a canvas, I ran with that. And I became really well known for doing custom canvases. Oh. And that's really the first step that I took into creating an actual business out of my hobby. So I was painting around the clock. I had wait lists of people who wanted name canvases for babies or for their kids or, you know, gifts. I became huge for that and huge for sayings that you weren't going to find in a needlepoint store. So I have painted thousands of custom canvases at this point. But yes, unfortunately, right now, painting canvases did get put on the back burner.
Yeah.
But it will come back. I have too much on my plate right now.
Right. Well, that's kind of fun because most people end up with a painting service and cranking out designs and counting on the service to send them 500 and so on and so forth. So this whole custom thing, so people would just contact you and say, hey, can you do one with I've got a new baby. I need this and the date. And that's what you put together?
Yeah. I would say 99% of my customers found me through Instagram, and the other 1% found me through word of mouth. I was painting so many name canvases, you couldn't believe. I think I've painted every name in the book. I found very early on in my, you know, call it my painting career, or, you know, for lack of a better word, I found that if I had to paint the same canvas over more than maybe two or three times, I lost so much interest in the canvas. I couldn't get myself to sit down and paint multiples of a canvas, which is really imperative when you're designing for shops and they need 35 of the same design. Right. And, you know, the painting services, unfortunately, they're great, but they take so long, and the shops want it now. And so I found very early on that that wasn't where my strong suit was. So if I could make money painting a canvas once, then that was good enough for me.
Right. So what's that like to, I mean, is it a collaborative thing? You know, I need one that's X size and I like these colors, and you go back and forth.
Yes. So I use Maxstitch. I love Maxstitch. Big learning curve with Maxstitch. I tell people all the time that it's not an easy software to use. But I'm very tech savvy. So for me, you know, I know how to do all the Adobe programs and all that. So I was able to translate what I learned, like, in college, learning how to use softwares, into Maxstitch. I figured out how to use the software, and I would design canvases, and I call them mock-ups, and the customer would tell me what they want. I have thousands of fonts on my computer, and I would create these one-of-a-kind canvases. I would send the customer a mock-up. They would tell me that they either loved it or hated it. If they hated it, I changed it. And we went back and forth. They would tell me colors. They would tell me, you know, whatever. Some people just, they didn't care. They were like, you design it and you paint it, and that's that. But it became a collaborative thing with my customer that we got to design it together, and then, I would paint it and ship it off to them.
What fun that must have been.
It was.
And still it could be.
Yes. Until I became very popular for making, I had one customer once that wanted like a 3-foot by 1-foot name canvas. And I painted it for her. It took me hours to paint this canvas for her. And it became my most popular style canvas. And I have done so many of those, but they are a torture to paint. First of all, they're bigger than my desk. So just to handle the canvas in and of itself is hard. And then, you know, it's such big letters, and to count it all out, I'm very big on stitch painting. So I made sure everything was, you know, perfectly counted, and it was a lot.
Yeah, but what fun to stitch that when you got that. I mean, I can imagine why it was popular, because you do have all that area where you can put a lot of fun stitch or fun texture.
Oh, yeah. People have made beautiful masterpieces.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yes. And do they get to choose the color then of the lettering or?
Everything. They can choose whatever they want. You know, the price reflected certain choices, but, right. It was fully customizable.
Yeah. That was one thing that came to my mind initially when you said about custom stuff is pricing that has got to be an interesting challenge.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, I had been in the market, so I knew what the prices were for a needlepoint, but also, you know, when you're ordering something that's personalized or customized, the prices reflect that. And so I kind of had the freedom to put whatever price I wanted. Obviously, I wouldn't charge, you know, $500 for a 4-inch round, but, you know, you have to make it, you know, feasible for people that they want to do it, but also a little out of reach so that it's special and that they're actually interested in stitching it. Because how many people walk into a needlepoint store, buy a million canvases, and then it just ends up in their stash and never gets stitched? I wanted my canvases to be stitched. So if somebody's paying a higher price, there's a more likelihood that they're going to stitch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that my canvases were cheap, because they were not, but people were willing to pay it. So,
yeah,
you know,
Well, if it's a custom thing, though, I mean, at some point, if you calculate all the hours that go into that before you even start painting, it starts to add up in a hurry.
It does. And I unfortunately had a few instances where, because I wasn't charging the customer until I was ready to paint, meaning once we had, you know, call it our initial consultation of what they wanted, they went through the mock-up process with me. And then right before I was ready to paint, that was when I would charge my customer. And then I ran into some circumstances where a couple people would go through the mock-up process with me and then never finalize the order. And I was wasting a lot of my time doing that, because it takes hours to design canvases, and you know, you have to strike when the inspiration is hot. You know, you can't, it's hard sometimes to force a design out. And so I was wasting a lot of my time. And so eventually I added a $50 deposit that would get you through the mock-up process. And then that $50 was taken off of the final invoice.
Okay.
So that way, if people were paying the deposit, they were more likely to see it through.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I can't imagine the frustration. You get ready to paint and, oh, geez.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All that time. Yep.
Yes, it was very frustrating, but there's always an answer.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that's interesting, because, you know, most painted canvas people we've talked to, you know, early on, oh, I can't keep painting these things, drives me nuts. But if you're doing a custom one every time, you've got a new excitement each time. So
exactly. And that's what I liked about it. And I mean, I was painting so many canvases, and then I was pregnant with my daughter, with my second child. And, you know, I knew that I was going to need a maternity leave. I was about to have my second child. As any mother knows, once you bring more than one child home, it just becomes crazy. And so I also moved to a new house when I was 37 weeks pregnant. And so I was, I guess you can say that I like when my life is crazy. I like when there's a lot going on. So, I knew that I was going on my maternity leave. So I was trying to get out as many canvases as possible before I moved and before I gave birth. And when I tell you that during my pregnancy, I was painting on average, I don't know, 8 to 10 canvases a day, which if as a painter,
Shayna,
you know how many
on,
that is.
Really?
I would wake up in the morning. I would feed my son breakfast. My husband, I would get him dressed. I would go upstairs, start painting. My husband would take him to school, and I would paint and paint and paint all day long. I would bring my son home from school, hang out with him for a few hours in the afternoon, put him to sleep, and then go keep painting until like 11 or 12 o'clock at night.
Oh,
and my house was under renovation, so I would have to come and check on construction. You know, I was pregnant, so all the side effects of pregnancy. Looking back, it was a crazy time of my life.
Yes. Yeah, because I can't imagine painting. Okay, because I know how that is. When you're pregnant, you have this belly. I mean, no matter what. And so you were trying to reach things over the, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, no, yeah.
I think when you're pregnant with your second or third or, you know, X number child, not your first. Your first is a totally different ballgame. But when you're pregnant with a second or third or fourth or fifth child, you don't even realize you're pregnant until the baby's coming out. Like the pregnancy is just so not on the forefront of your mind.
Right. I got to keep moving forward. Don't have time.
Yeah. Yeah. Survival of the fittest. That was, you know, it was
crazy. You're just crazy.
Saying it out loud, I realized how crazy I was. Yeah. I didn't realize it at the time. That was just life, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I'll say.
Jeez. Yeah. You do what you have to do if you're a mom. I'm sorry.
Exactly. It's true.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes.
Plus, sitting there painting like that for hours on end. Oh.
Yeah. Well, there's obviously more that I was doing. This wasn't in the questions that you sent me, but because I'm sure that you don't know about it. So I'm going to throw it in here. But about 6 months before the pandemic hit. So we're talking August 2019. I was sitting on the couch with my best friend, and I said, there are so many people in the United States who stitch who don't have access to a needlepoint store, or there's so many people in the US who want to learn how to stitch who don't have access to a needlepoint store. I'm going to create a way to teach all these people how to needlepoint. And so I came up with my beginner's class, where I created a canvas. I would put it in a really cute little project bag that had my logo on it, with the threads, the scissors, the needle minders, the needle threaders, the needles, everything you needed to get started. I would mail you a kit to your door, and I would give you a 2-hour Zoom class plus the recording afterwards and a 15-page PDF with all the instructions in it. And that is really how my business took off.
Hmm.
So I went, yeah.
What a great model, though, because I mean, that's perfect.
Yes. I now have three level classes that I offer, but I started, so in August when I started, I kept my classes very small for that intimate feel. So I maxed my classes at 5 to 7 people. And I started by teaching one class a month. I felt that was all that I could handle. And you know, the time to market it and get people to sign up and have time to ship the kits and all that. So I was teaching one class a month, and it was pulling teeth to find people that could sign up for this class because people didn't know that I existed. And so it was a lot of Instagram, a lot of Facebook, a lot of, you know, Needlepoint Nation, a lot of all of that, tell your friends. And every month I would get people to sign up. My classes were always sold out, but it was like, really, I had to dig for these customers. On March 12th, whatever the first day of the pandemic was, 2020, my sister-in-law called me and she was like, how are you not freaking out? How are you not stocking up your house? Everything's shutting down today. And I was like, in no world can everything shut down. So I'm not that stressed about it. And I remember laughing her off, and I was in my car and I got on Instagram, on my Instagram stories, and I made a story, and I was laughing throughout the whole story. I still watch the video sometimes. And I said, well, it seems that the whole world is shutting down and everybody's going to be stuck home. So maybe I should add some more classes. From that day, I went on to teach 3 classes a week that were fully sold out for the entire pandemic. I could not keep up with my supplies. I had wait lists of people getting in my classes. I was teaching my classes at night after my son went to sleep. My daughter wasn't born yet. And just the, you know, managing all the supplies for the classes to make sure I had enough for the amount of people that were signing up was a job in and of itself.
Wow.
So add that into painting 12 hours a day and renovating a house and moving.
Okay, so I'm tired. I gotta take a nap. That's it. Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, what you know, what vision and timing, though. Excellent.
It really was. And I think that I was able to be so successful because of my timing before, because I was already set up prior to the pandemic. So day one of the pandemic, all I had to do was open up a new registration link. I didn't have to figure out all the stuff that I had to figure out for my first class.
Yeah. Because that's what, you know, that's for so many needlework designers, teachers, whatever. They went through such a period just getting over the technology hump, and you already had right. that in the bag. Yeah. Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So that's how I grew my customer base. You know, I eventually added, so I started with my beginner's technique class, and in that class I was covering all the basics. So the first half of the class was just going over, you know, different mesh sizes, different needle sizes, different threads, how to start your thread, how to end your thread. And then I would teach 4 stitches. So in my current, I'm now on my 3rd design for the beginner's class. Every year I've been changing the designs to keep people interested. So right now I do the continental stitch, a skip tent, I haven't taught it in a while, the satin stitch, and a cross stitch. So those are the 4 current stitches in my beginner's class. And then I eventually added on my decorative stitches class, because now I had all these people who had taken my beginner's class, and I'm like, well, now I need them to come back. You know, I need to give them more. I need to feed them, you know? So, I started my decorative stitches class, which I believe, if I remember correctly, it's 12 decorative stitches on a different canvas. And I, in all my classes, I use all different decorative threads. So in my beginner's class, you know, I use silk lame braid, I use velvet, I use, I believe I use silk and ivory, and I don't remember. I haven't taught a class in like 6 months, so I don't remember what the fourth thread was. And then in my decorative stitches class, I introduce, you know, over dyed floss. I introduce, you know, an array of threads plus the 12 stitches. And then, you know, now I had a whole another group that was like, okay, now I took the decorative stitches class. Now what? Then I created, which I've taught, I believe I've taught it 3 times now, is my master class, which is a 5-week series class. So for every week for 5 weeks, they would come online and I taught all the advanced techniques. I was teaching turkey work, beading, French knots. I actually save the proper basket weave for my master class, because when I started my classes, I had the basket weave in my beginner's class and I was teaching, you know, the steps and the poles and the proper stuff. And it wasn't clicking. And so I eventually took it out of that class and just stuck to continental. And so I actually don't have basket weave in my classes until the master class, which a lot of people find funny. And so the first time I offered a master class, I opened up 10 spots for that class and people were so excited about it that the second it launched, my website shut down because there were so many people on my website and there was a glitch. And I oversold 10 spots. So I sold a total of 20 spots in 2 minutes.
Oh, geez. Oh my.
and it's not a cheap class. So it was very exciting for me when that happened. And
wow,
it's really grown a lot since then. So like you ask how I got to a store. And like I said before we started, like my business has turned over so many times since I became a full-time designer. Like I went from being a shop designer, you know, like designing for shops, then designing custom canvases, then teaching classes. And now, you know, the next natural progression was to open a store.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting about basket weave. So, some very talented veteran stitcher once told me, or I read it or something, that to be good at basket weave, you need to do it every day, which
yes,
seemed
I
extreme, but it really, I think there's a lot of truth to that because it looks so simple, but to not,
Yeah, it's true. And I teach, you know, I teach the basket weave with, I didn't know when I first started stitching, I was taught basket weave in my beginner's class that I took at my local shop in 2013, I believe it was. And I learned the basket weave and nobody taught me steps and poles. They just said, you know, you work it on a diagonal and you go up and you go down and that was it. And I was in New York at one point and I went to visit Rita's needlepoint store before Rita retired. So Rita was still there every day. And Rita was, I don't know if you know Rita or if you've heard about Rita, but I think my great grandmother used to shop with Rita. She had been around forever. And she was this little old lady. She was maybe, you know, 4'10". She was tiny. And she was very critical about needlepoints. So, you know, people say they're always scared to bring a needlepoint into a store if they don't stitch it well because they don't want you to look at the back. Rita didn't care. She would grab your canvas and look directly at the back of it. And for years, it was my mission to make Rita like my needlepoints, to tell me that I was doing a good job. And so anytime I was in New York, which was often at the time, I would take whatever project I was, you know, working on to Rita. And I'd be like, look, Rita, look at my project. And she'd kind of like nod and be like, yeah, okay. This girl thinks she's good, but she doesn't know. And and it was, you know, and so I would get so heartbroken every time I left because I'm like, I just want Rita to tell me that I'm doing a good job. It was like my source of validation. And one day, I don't remember what I was working on, but one day I walked in and Rita picked up my canvas and she looked at the back and she was like, wow, this looks very pretty. And my whole world was made. Like, I could have retired needlepoint at that point and been happy. Like, I was, you know, as long as she told me that I was doing a good job. And the next time I went in, she sat me down and she said, "You do a beautiful job stitching, but you don't know what you're doing." And she sat me down and she taught me the steps and the poles. And so I learned that day what the steps and the poles were, and I've never looked back. So I tell people in my classes all the time that, like, once you see the steps and the poles, you can't unsee it. You will never be able to do a basket weave not the correct way going forward.
Right. So she got the message that you are committed to this. So, all right.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And she's, you know, she's retired since then. She sold her store to a new owner who's also very sweet. And I visit when I'm in New York. But Rita's, you know, there was nobody like Rita.
Obviously, she was one of those powerhouses, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I went back before we did this one. I went back and actually listened to, which is creepy in its own right, the first one we did. And I'd forgotten that you are the fourth generation of Stitcher in your family.
Yes. And,
you know, that happens from time to time, not usually, but from time to time. But I think the part that set in my head was, you know, four generations of stitching is one thing, but then to stick with it and obviously love it to the point where you open a store, you know, it's more than just a casual hobby. It's a real commitment on your part. And obviously Rita saw that.
Yes. I tell people all the time, you know, when people ask me, because everybody that walks into my store asks me, well, how did you get started in needlepoint? And so I tell them, you know, I'm a fourth generation stitcher, but I'm the only one who is smart enough to monetize our hobby. yes, I'm a fourth generation stitcher. I actually, in my store, I have hanging my great grandmother. So to backstep a few inches. I started doing name canvases because my great grandmother, for all of her great grandchildren, stitched us a name canvas when we were born. Oh. And so I felt that had a lot of meaning for me as a designer to bring that, you know, joy into somebody else's house, because now I'm 31 years old and I still have my name canvas that my great grandmother stitched for me. Mm. And so I always say that needlepoint outlives all of us. And so, in my store hanging, I have my name canvas that my great grandmother stitched for me, as well as an alphabet that she stitched for me. And then in my house, I have another needlepoint that she stitched for me, which are very special to me. You know, they could use some dry cleaning and reframing, but they're very special to me just as they are.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Two aunts. It's actually my dad's side of the family that are the needle pointers, which is funny. Everybody assumes it's my mom's side. And so my dad's sisters are the two who taught me how to needle point initially. And since then they have taken my classes. They call me with questions all the time. They, you know, I've become their teacher at this point, which is funny.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've listed out all the craziness of your life, but then you go and top it during a pandemic. You decide to start a store. What is wrong with you? I mean, that's just that's a tremendous thing. Is it has it been a dream to have a store, or was it, like you said, just the next step?
So, like I said, I like to live my life in craziness. And so when I was about 8.5 months pregnant, I went to my dad and to my husband and I said, I want to open a needlepoint store.
You're about to give birth to a kid.
After you have the baby, sure, we'll revisit it. And I said, no, I want to open a needlepoint store now. And they were like, no, you're crazy. It's not happening. And so I said, at the time when I was pregnant, I went and looked at locations. Like, I was serious about opening a needlepoint store, and the locations that I looked at, they didn't feel right. And I didn't want to force it out. I told myself that if I wanted to open a store, it had to come naturally. And so I looked at locations, it didn't feel right. And I said, okay, maybe it is a little crazy for me to open a needlepoint store right now. I'm going to put this on the back burner until I can handle it. And then, you know, a few months after that was when I started my classes And I had also told myself that I needed to up my following at that point. I had maybe, I don't know, 2,000 followers at that point. And I needed more of a customer base to be able to open a store. You know, I had done stitch clubs in Miami and I couldn't really find local stitchers. And so I was really betting on my online following for to be my customer in my store. And so I said, I need to, you know, work on my business, grow my business a little bit more. And then when the timing is right, it will happen. And I kind of manifested it. And it was always in the back of my head that, you know, if I just build it a little bit more and a little bit more, eventually it will lead me to a store. So, you know, then I had my son before the pandemic. So the pandemic was kind of, I mean, as all needlepoint owners will tell you, I think needlepoint business owners, I won't limit it to shops. Like I think most of us, our businesses really took off during the pandemic. Maybe the shops hurt a little bit in the beginning because, you know, people were scared to go anywhere and they had to maybe shut down. But overall, and I could be wrong, don't quote me on this, but I don't think we lost too many needlepoint shops during the pandemic because there were so many new stitchers joining the hobby and they needed a place to go to buy their threads. And so from my perspective, I think the needlepoint industry took off during the pandemic. And so I eventually, you know, I had my second child. I was kind of bored, honestly, of painting canvases and teaching classes. I needed something new. And it sounds funny, but I go to a lady to get my eyebrows done. I've been going to her for years and she has an incredible customer base. She has, you know, a lot of people from our community go to her and I just really like her customer base. And at the time there was next door to her store was a COVID testing center. And so I went home and I told my husband, like, I like this location, but there's a COVID testing center there. Then I thought, how long can a COVID testing center last in a location? They're not signing 10-year leases, you know? And so I called the landlord and I said, I'm very interested in that location where the COVID testing center place is. And they said, okay, well, we have a friendly lease with them. And we told them they could stay until we found a tenant. And so I essentially kicked out the COVID testing center. I disinfected the entire place. And that was where I put my store. And people come in every single day and they're like, is this where the COVID tests are? And I'm like, not anymore.
Do we look like a testing center?
Exactly. So that was kind of how I found the store.
So your location is right next to the eyebrow place because you felt like that was a good customer base or at least a draw.
He had a good customer. Exactly. My whole business basically has been built on the beginner stitcher, getting people hooked into needlepoint. And so I felt that her customer base was a good group of women that I could transform into needlepointers.
Hmm. Has that panned out?
It has. Like I'd say 40% of the people, 50% of the people that go to her walk into my store after.
Oh, all right. Good call then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you have a vision? I mean, did you always say if I had a store, it would look like this or
no.
Just a blank slate and I'll figure it out?
No. So I had actually been in a COVID testing center to get a COVID test at one point. So I had been inside the store, but when I went inside, I wasn't looking at it from a shop owner perspective. I was just like, okay, here's the COVID testing center. I know there's four walls and a bathroom and a closet. And so when I was going through the process of signing the lease, I actually never even went inside before I signed the lease. Once the COVID testing people moved out, like I just knew that that was the location that I wanted. And I never even stepped inside. And we signed the lease. I pick up the keys and I went inside and I called my friend Joyce from Silver Stitch Needle. And I said, okay, I have this space now. I don't know how to, you know, build it out. What am I supposed to do here? Like no preparation, like no business plan, no preparation. And I there needed to be a lot of work done to the store, which I knew taking it on. The floors were old and ugly. You know, it needed to be painted and it needed like a facelift almost. So I did a lot of work to the store. I put new floors down. I actually put up a dividing wall in between to build a little bit of a back room. I opened up the ceiling because it had very low drop ceilings. And I felt like that was not good for a needlepoint store because it needs to be open and airy and bright. And so I opened up the ceiling and I put track lights and I just started building out my store little by little. I had no idea. The biggest hurdle, I think, and I'm still dealing with it, was figuring out how much space I was going to need for threads. And so I made a list of the threads that I wanted to carry, like my bare minimum, of what I needed to bring into the store. And I found out how big the slat wall pieces were, and I bought 5 slat walls and I used them all. I filled up my store, you know, with the slat. And I actually yesterday ordered another slat wall that I need to put up. the biggest hurdle has been figuring out the placement of the threads and how much space each line of thread takes up. Because on a slat wall, you know, a silk and ivory takes up more space than a pepper pot, because with pepper pot, you only need to space it 2 rows, whereas silk and ivory, you need to space it, whatever, 3 or 4 rows or whatever it is. So, you know, the amount of space that it takes up on the slat wall and how much slat wall you need, that has been my biggest hurdle.
Yeah. What was that like during the pandemic? Because, you know, following you on Instagram and you're building the store, and is she ever going to get this store open? It just seemed like it was taking a long time, and that just could be my perception. But, you know, especially in the heat of the pandemic, getting workers to come in and do things was very difficult. Did you end up doing a lot of it yourself, or were you fortunate?
No. My dad is a developer. And so when I was renovating my house, you know, I never had an interest in my dad's business. I had never seen a project through with him. I knew absolutely nothing about construction. And so when we were renovating my house, my dad kind of took the lead on that project and I watched. I was here every single day. Met all the workers. I saw what it takes to do construction. And I just kind of watched him and watched what he did. And when it came time to do the construction in my store, I called my dad and I was like, okay, new project, let's go. And he was like, oh no, you can do this one yourself. And so I, true story. I mean, he didn't really phrase it like that in case he listens. He didn't really phrase it like that. He was also busy doing his, you know, his business. So I really did take it on myself, which I wasn't really expecting to do. And the girl next door who owns the eyebrow place had just renovated her store and she did a lot of the same work that I wanted to do. So I asked her for her construction people, and because they had already done it next door, they knew what I wanted. So it was easy to explain what I wanted to do. And so it was more a matter of getting them to the store to do the work and, or getting the material. But I think I picked up my keys. I opened June 20th, May, April. I think I picked up my keys April 1st and I opened the store June 20th. So 2.5 months of construction. Pre-pandemic, it probably would have taken a month or 6 weeks, but that's just not the world we live in anymore, unfortunately. So it was more a matter of getting the people there and getting the construction done. There was also a little bit of a time of a lapse because, like I said, I had never gone into the store before I got the keys. So I had to pick up the keys, go to the store, figure out what I wanted to do, draw up a plan, find the right vendors, and then start the construction. So I don't think I actually started my construction until 2.5 weeks after I got the keys, which is a long time.
Well, you did well then.
Exactly. So, you know, I could understand why it looked like it took a long time. I also didn't show a lot of the, you know, I would open the door and just dust would fly out everywhere. The amount of emails I got from my landlord saying to clean up the dust in front of my store. So there wasn't much to show on Instagram other than what I was showing, buckets and, you know, thing ladders and that was kind of it. So I was, you know, I was also very busy trying to do it all. So I didn't, you know, social media kind of comes last. Like I'd be at the store and I'd be like, oh, this seems like a good thing to post to show people that I'm still alive. And so that's kind of what I was doing.
Yeah. What this is telling me is I spend too much time on Instagram. Shana to get her store open. Yeah. I need to find something else to do.
You and everybody else, people would message me all the time. Like, when's the store opening? Are you really opening a store? I haven't gotten any notifications. I'm like, don't worry. Everybody will know when the store is going to be open.
Now it looks like it looks from the pictures, everything is white. So wall, ceiling.
White and pink.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I did everything in white. I like white. I like clean, sharp lines. My house is very similar. Everything's white. And I thought that, you know, you bring in the color with the threads and the canvases.
Yeah.
And that's what it looked like to me when I looked at the photos you sent us. Those clean lines, and I think they appeal a lot to younger people. My daughter is 22 and she is very much, she likes those kind of clean lines. That's
yeah,
very much her aesthetic. And I think that's very appealing. Like, you know, a lot of the older people, they've got, you know, it's kind of vintage or, you know.
Right.
But to appeal to those young people who are getting their eyebrows done next door.
Exactly.
You want to have that nice clean space, I would think.
And I wanted my store to be representative of me and who I am. And I think that I, you know, through my canvas selection and through how I built out my store, I think it represents a lot about me. I love pink. And from day one, my branding has been pink. And so it was only natural to make the store pink and white. I mean, my logo is, and my branding is really hot pink. And I felt hot pink was a little overbearing. So I toned it down for, you know, like my pink wall and the cushions on the chairs. I did a soft baby pink.
And I also think for a needlepoint store that white has a real value. Because when I was doing this room where I record and do my needlework, I put up sound panels, and I was going to put up deep blue sound panels because I like blue. And then I realized that if I did that, I was going to create a blue cast in the room that would influence how all the colors look. So I went with white. And
yes.
So I think that there's a real value in just not having your store influence the colors of the threads.
So it's funny you bring that up because I said that my biggest challenge was the slat walls. I was wrong. My biggest challenge was the lights. I have a store nearby that is a lighting store. And I went into this lighting store and I said, I'm a needlepoint store. I have a lot of color in my store. I need good light. And to make a long story short, I think we went through 5 or 6 different track heads before I was able to find one from a different store, not from the original store, that had the right brightness to it. And so I put up all these track heads of my 5th or 6th trial track head. I got them all up, and by me, I mean the electrician. And so I finally get them all up and we turn on the lights, and I had like a panic attack because it, with all the lights that I put in, and I put a lot, it was nowhere near as bright as I envisioned it. Oh. And that was not good enough for me. I needed, you know, my store has a huge window in the front. I have amazing natural light in my store. But if you're sitting and stitching, there's nothing worse than sitting and stitching in a not well lit room. And it was not good enough for me, the lights that were there. So I called my electrician back. And I said, we need to have a meeting because this is not good enough for me. And he would sit there and he'd be like, well, we can do whatever you want. And I'm like, yes, I understand that you can do whatever I want, but I don't know how to achieve what I want. I need you to tell me. And so he sent me a link for these lights, and I was way over budget at this point, and these lights were not cheap. And he said, these are the lights you need. And I was like, okay. And I closed my eyes. I bought the lights, and every single person that walks into my store comments how well lit my store is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need that. If yes. you're choosing threads, there's nothing worse than trying, or you bought threads and you think they're going to work. You think they're the right color. And then they're not.
Yeah. No, I agree. It needed to be well lit. That was, my vision was a very bright space, and that's what I created.
Well, it sure shows up, and it looks appealing to me. Like, I want to go in that place because you want bright and cheery, and you got it. I mean, it really shows in the photos. It really, this is a place I could camp out in. Yes.
Right. And I wanted that curb appeal. I wanted people to be able to see into my store because I'm trying to bring in a customer that's not a needle pointer. A needle pointer is going to seek out a store no matter where they are. And it doesn't really matter what the store looks like inside, because a needle pointer is always going to find a needle point store. But I'm seeking out a customer that's not a needle pointer yet.
It's so bright, ships out on the ocean, use it as a guide.
Yeah, it's true. And at night, I don't have a picture of it, but I have my big neon sign up in my store. And when the electrician put the outlet for the neon sign, I told him to put it on a switch, and he didn't. And so the neon sign is on 24/7 because there's no switch for that outlet. And at night, my entire store is lit up pink. And that was not intentional.
So what were the early days like? I mean, I getting inventory has got to be a huge challenge.
Yes.
Do you feel like you guessed right on that when you opened the doors, you had the inventory you needed, or is that still a work in progress?
I think inventory is always a work in progress. Okay. I hadn't signed my lease yet. I signed my lease April 1st. So we were already in lease negotiations in March during market. And, it was kind of scary to me because I didn't look at any other space. This was the only space I wanted. And if this space didn't work out, then it was almost as if my store was not going to work out because I couldn't envision my store in any other space. Mm. And so the market was coming up. Every single night I would, bother my husband and I'd be like, I don't know if I should go to market. What if I go and buy all this inventory and then the store doesn't see its way through? I don't want to spend all this money if I'm not 100% sure. And it was a back and forth and back and forth of, I don't know if I should go. I also had just had foot surgery, 4 weeks before.
You're writing a book, right? You're writing a book?
So I didn't know what to do. My doctor was obviously telling me, don't go to the trade show. Don't walk on your foot. And whatever, long story short, I went to the trade show and it was very overwhelming for me because I had been at the trade show as a seller or an exhibitor, never as a buyer. And I kind of didn't know where to start. It was, I was doing a blind buy because I didn't know who my customer was. I knew who I envisioned my customer to be, but I didn't know who my customer was. I don't know I didn't know at the time what my customers were going to like. And I didn't want to get stuck with inventory that was never going to move. And so I kind of just bought what I liked. I was like, well, I'll stitch that. I might as well have it in the store. Oh. And it ended up being a very fun experience because who wouldn't want to go and just buy all the canvases that they want to stitch, And so I limited myself. I bought one of every canvas that I liked that I wanted to buy. I did not buy multiples of anything at the show, just in case. And And then I came home and, you know, I placed my orders with some of the smaller shops. So going back to what I was talking about in the beginning, where I felt like I was blacklisted from a lot of stores as a young, new needlepoint designer, one of my missions of my store was to include these young, new needlepoint designers who might feel intimidated to go and to approach stores. So I, every single night when I get home and I'm, you know, scrolling Instagram, I find, you know, these young designers on Etsy, on Instagram or whatever. And I message them and I say, do you wholesale? I'd love to carry you in my store.
Yeah.
And a lot, you know, a lot of them are like, oh, well, I'm still figuring out the wholesale, but I'll let you know when I'm ready. Or, you know, yes, that would be great. I'm, you know, so appreciative. Or, you know, I want to include the young designers in my store.
That's excellent.
So,
Cause like you said, it gives them an out, a way to get into the market and do it legitimately. Yeah.
And it also gives me a different, you know, angle from all the other stores, because every needlepoint store you walk into is going to carry Kate Dickerson, is going to carry Alice Peterson and Susan Roberts and The Collection and, you know, all these big name brand needlepoint designers.
Right.
But you're not going to find the young designers in every store, which gives me a little bit of a, you know, I don't know what the word is.
Yeah. Well, it gives you an edge. It gives you an angle and...
Exactly, that
others don't have. Yep.
Exactly.
So tell us about the store. I mean, obviously you have threads and painted canvas. Are you strictly a painted canvas store? Do we have places where people can come in and stitch, classes? What's the overall offering that you have?
So yes, I have two tables in my store with 12 chairs. So I will be having classes when I can stop for 5 seconds to make a class schedule. and if you couldn't guess, I have no time to do any of that.
So I
am going to be hosting classes in my store. I would also like to get back into my online classes. I will try and figure out a way to do a hybrid of both, where I can stream my class from my store and have people online and in store. But that will come eventually. I'm also slowly, very, very slowly but surely working on pre-recorded classes for my online customers so that they don't have to wait for me to be able to learn. So it would be the same concept of sending you a kit and then you have the online resource to learn. This has been what is first on my list since the day I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, and she's now over a year old and I still haven't done it. But I am going to be doing pre-recorded classes. And then, in my store, I have canvases and threads. I have printed and painted canvases. Something that I also did that I felt would separate me from other needlepoint stores, because you know, that's the whole idea. You need to make yourself different. You need to make yourself stand out. And, you know, there's so many needlepoint stores that are needlepoint and knitting. I don't know anything about knitting, so that was never an option for me. Somebody actually walked into the store the other day and she was like, well, you don't need to know anything about knitting. Just buy the knitting yarn. And so I was like, okay, that's like going to a needlepoint person or a knitting person and say, well, you don't know anything about needlepoint, just buy the needlepoint yarn. How many lines of threads are there? You know, how is one supposed to choose? So right. Anyways, knitting is not on the table for me. So what I enjoy doing is, during the pandemic, I bought an embroidery machine and I love to embroider. I embroider everything. Everything my kids put on their body is personalized. All my, you know, bags are personalized. I love it. And so I bought a big Brudin machine. It's the oldest embroidery machine that exists. And it's coming hopefully in the next 3 months. It has been delayed, you know, with the climate of the world. And so I am planning on doing embroidered bags, pouches, like project bags and stuff that needlepointers can use. So that's kind of how I will bring two different needle art worlds together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, another thing, because of my location and because of, the kind of customer that I'm bringing in, I really was trying to find products that I could sell in my store that could work for a needlepointer and also work for a non-needlepointer that they would be interested in purchasing. And it's a very fine line of of bringing in products, but not becoming a gift shop. And so I went to the Atlanta market, the AmeriMart, I believe it's called. It's the gift show, the annual gift show. And I was looking for this type of product that I could bring in, that I could sell it to a needle pointer to use as an accessory, and I could also sell it to a non-needle pointer. That way I could make a sale to any person that was walking into my store, because at the end of the day, money is the goal, right? And so I found this brand called Nora Fleming, which is very popular, I believe, in the South. And she makes these little trays. They're melamine or ceramic trays. And you can, she has, they're called minis. And they're basically like little icons. So she has, you know, a little Christmas tree and a little Santa, or a pineapple, or a sailboat, or a heart, or a pineapple, or a million different options. And they're all interchangeable into these trays or bowls. It's kind of difficult to explain if you can't visualize it, but I felt that that was a good product that a needle pointer could buy to have on their bedside or their table, where they could put their scissors and their needles and their threads while they're not stitching. And a non-needle pointer could buy it to just keep it as a bedside tray. So it actually all arrived today, which is why I was not able to get my Skype up and running before we got on this call. So those are kind of little things that I've been doing in the store to help make me different than just your average needlepoint store.
Yeah.
Not that any needlepoint store is average. We're all exceptional because we're at needlepointers.
That's the word. Yep, that's the word. How are you juggling online versus in-store sales? I mean, is that...
Do you set aside
some space for that, or?
Yes. So another big thing that I really wanted for my store was a big online presence. You know, obviously KC Needlepoint and needlepoint.com are probably the two biggest websites in the needlepoint industry. And I wanted to have that online presence. You know, as a young needlepointer, I like to shop online for needlepoint. And when I started needlepointing in 2013, you could not buy a needlepoint canvas online to save your life. And so I really wanted that online presence as a way to help move the needlepoint industry forward. And so going back to what you were saying, that it felt like, you know, it was taking so long for my store to come together and I was so quiet about it, was because most of the time I was up until 2 a.m. uploading inventory to my website. I'm not kidding. Though I think the website was the hardest part of putting the store together. And I had a wonderful programmer. He had built my website previously when I was just a designer, and now he redid it again for my store. And we worked very well together, and we would be up all night like, okay, I just finished uploading 500 products, go do your thing. and tagging everything and categorizing everything and the photos and the editing and, you know, building the actual website of what it's going to look like and the checkout process and making sure everything runs smoothly. And it's still, you know, I have one inventory for the store and for online. So in that sense, it's very easy. But like last night, I saw that a customer was having a hard time checking out on the website, and the website wasn't going through, and it wasn't because of her credit card. It was because of my website. So I was on the phone with the programmer at 10 o'clock last night, like, I need you to fix this. And meanwhile, my husband is trying to do, like, you know, test charges on my website. And so, you know, that's the beauty of running a small business behind the scenes of, you know, all the late nights. But the website is imperative, I think, for running a business today.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. Yep.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you've been open. Is it still fun? Is it still overwhelming? Are you looking forward to it?
Not
every day?
As yes, I truly, truly am. Not overwhelming at all. I won't say at all. Everything in my life is overwhelming. it's been a fun overwhelming. I have thoroughly enjoyed every step of the process thus far. I obviously love shopping for inventory. It's the most fun part. Inventory management, you know, I have a software that does a great job. Yesterday, I have an employee in my store. And so yesterday she was like, well, do you want me to start going through and making a list of like the threads that we're short of? And I was like, oh, no, we have a software that does that. We don't need to count threads. And so that has also been, you know, fairly seamless so far. I wake up excited every day to go to my store. My store doesn't open until 10, but I'm pretty much there at 8:45 every morning after I drop off my son at school or camp. We're in the summer now. So so far I have no complaints, except that I wish my space was a little bit bigger.
already.
Yes. I'm very close with Joyce from Silver Stitch Needlepoint. And so she lives in South Florida as well. So she comes to the store all the time. And so I was telling her, she was down this week. And so I said, oh yeah, I'm having my first trunk show starting on Monday, you know, August 1st, it's my first trunk show. And she was like, well, where are you putting all these canvases? And I was like, I don't know. I'll figure that out when they come. So that's kind of how I do things. You know, I don't start with a foolproof plan, but in my life thus far, everything has worked itself out. And so that's kind of what I'm going with for my store. Okay.
All right. Yeah. She's a new store and she's already got the same complaint that people have been open for 50 years. I don't have enough room.
Yeah. I mean, rent, unfortunately, in South Florida is very expensive. And so I took, you know, the space that I could handle for the price that I could afford.
Yeah.
And I wish I had more space, but yeah. I will get there.
Right.
Yeah. Just right. Be nice to the eyebrow lady when you take over her space, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Just remember. Remember where you came from.
I won't say the thought hasn't crossed my mind.
All right, Shayna, well, congratulations on the store. It's sbtstitches.com is where you go to find out all the things that are going on and will be going on in the future. Very exciting. It's a beautiful store, and thanks for telling us about it.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to our next podcast together.
Let's do it in less than 4 years. How about that?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone for listening.